Welcome to Vegan Online Academy, providing food for body and mind. My name is Carrie Harrison and I'm an educator with a Master's in Education degree, a Bachelor's in Science degree and a Certificate in Plant-Based Nutrition. This week I'm talking to Carol McLeod, a graduate of Vegan 101. Carol is also a teacher and she agreed to take part in Vegan 101 to check it from an educational angle with no intention herself of going plant-based. Let's see how she got on.
Welcome to the show, Carol. It's great to have you here on Vegan Online Academy podcasts. Can you tell everyone a little bit about yourself?
I can indeed. My name is Carol McLeod and I am 70 years old. And I live in rural Aberdeenshire, which is about 7 miles to the nearest two small towns and an hour away from the city of Aberdeen. The main industries are farming and fishing, usual service industries, and of course, tourism. We're in Bonnie, Scotland. I've lived here for 40 plus years, but have travelled extensively with my husband, who works in the oil industry. I retired from teaching in 2009, and still do a lot of travelling and hope to do more while I am reasonably fit and healthy.
Sounds good. So just to put a picture in people's minds, your house is basically surrounded by fields. There's no public transport at all, no buses around you. If you want to get anywhere, you've got to drive, but it's a very, very beautiful part of the world.
It is indeed.
So, in order to provide full disclosure for the listeners, you undertook Vegan Online Academy's Vegan 101 class, the Transition to Veganism course, basically because I needed help and I needed human guinea pigs to test the system for me and just check that everything worked. So, with that in mind, with this idea that you didn't really want to do it, I was asking you for help. What were your thoughts before undertaking the class? What was going through your mind?
Well, as a guinea pig, my first thought was I was happy to help you, but the focus for me would be on the teaching aspect, what worked and what was ambiguous, etc. And initially, I was worried that I really wasn't a candidate for the course because I thought it was intended for people who had come to a decision about wanting to become vegan. And the course would therefore help them on their way. And this is certainly not my starting point, but I answered all the questions as honestly as I could, and also from my own standpoint of someone who is just jogging along and not really aspiring to be a vegan.
Absolutely. So it was something you're like, you took it from the perspective of, okay, so I'm going to help out with this project, but I'm really going to check it out from an educational point of view, and the content's probably not going to be of much interest to me. So that's quite interesting to think about it from that point of view. So you worked your way through Vegan Online Academy's Transition to Veganism course. It's Vegan 101, which is an online class, much like you would experience if you were at a good university and part of your course work was undertaken online. It's a very similar process. So there are online articles to read, recommended videos to watch, podcasts to listen to, and quizzes to answer. So you finished your class a number of months ago now. So what images or facts have really stuck with you from the course?
The focus for me from the course was a health aspect. And so what I took from it and still have in my mind is the fact that a plant-based diet can prevent and the incidence of the big diseases like heart, cancer, diabetes, and so on. And to find that out and to realise that that wasn't familiar to Joe Public is quite appalling. So that was a really stark revelation, I suppose, that the information is there, the medical people have it, and they still hand out. The first line of defence for them is a whole heap of tablets, not a lifestyle change.
Absolutely.
Which it should be. Yeah,
absolutely. I think that really shocked me about all of this, because obviously I'm coming at things from my first standpoint is the animals and of what's happening to them. But then when you dig into the subject, and especially around the health, there's so much information that just completely wipes out everything that you thought you knew about health, in terms of we're told that heart disease is hereditary. We're told that your chances of stroke is hereditary. We're told that, well, you're more likely to get cancer if other people in your family have got cancer. But when you actually dig into it, you find out that a lot of these diseases are lifestyle diseases and can easily be remedied through changes to diet, which is you know, what you're alluding to, that it's shocking that the medical profession aren't making us more aware of this.
I mean, I was very conscientious and went through the course, and that's the teacher side of it, keeping up with it. And I watched lots of videos, and I was forever writing down statistics and information, stuff that I didn't know. And if I didn't know, all the factual evidence, the research that's been done to back it up. And that's from somebody that was just doing it to see if it worked. You can imagine the impact on somebody that has, you know, a definite motivation for wanting to do the course.
Absolutely. Because I think a lot of people will come at it from one aspect and then they see this bigger picture. So the course takes you through the health information first. And you've spoken a little bit about that and things that stuck in your mind there. And the next stop is the ethics of eating animals. So what struck you from this section, and how did it make you feel being confronted with some of these things that you maybe hadn't seen or thought about before?
Well, there's two aspects to this. The first thing is how we are brainwashed, is the wrong word, but how we accept what we eat on our plates and we don't think how it got there. And the comparison they made in one of the studies or videos, whatever it was I watched, was, why don't we eat our pets, the dogs? But we're quite happy to eat cattle and sheep and chickens. Now, that was very well presented. We just accept it.
Yes.
We're meat eaters and we don't look. And once you go behind that, you see, and then the other thing was all the slaughterhouses and how the animals are reared. You can't really watch that and then go and have chicken or beef or something like that. There's something, you know, there's a process there that, because it was there and you were seeing it, then it altered your perception completely. But most people are not looking at that. They're not, and then they're not drawing the conclusion.
Yes.
But I can't, I mean, if you go in the supermarket now, and I don't buy chicken, but if I was, that's the image that gets in my head, is the rearing of them and the cruelty and all the inhumane practices. And it's going on, and we, Joe Public, are not allowed to know about it because the agricultural lobbyists have so much power, especially in my part of the country. Farming and fishing are the main industries.
Absolutely. For sure. So as you say, there's two aspects to it. There's this idea of the cognitive dissonance, which is where your brain locks out and doesn't look at things that make it uncomfortable and rationalizes things to an extent to allow you to behave in a way that isn't a part of your ethical build. And the other part of it is how it's all hidden from view as well, so that it's very difficult, or has been very difficult, for us to see what actually happens in these slaughterhouses. But now with social media and various documentaries that are being made, more and more people are being made aware of it. But as you say, the power of these agricultural lobbyists is still very much there. So there's still quite a lot of work to do in terms of turning things around. The course,
progress is being made, because only recently, the last month or so, there have been lots of things coming through the media about climate change and meat and various countries or restaurants or chains banning it. So the bandwagon is beginning to gather strength.
I think so. I really do feel that it's reaching an absolute tipping point. And it's interesting you mentioned the environmental aspects, because I know, especially in the UK and in Scotland where you are, climate change has moved on in the conversation from being, you know, what's causing it or why, as to what is the impact going to be and how do we fix it. Whereas in the United States, it's still very much, there's still very much an argument or conversation going round about, is it man-made or is it not? And I think in Europe, we've moved way beyond that. And the environmental impact of animal agriculture is something that the course takes you through. So you go through the health aspects, you go through the ethics of eating animals, and then you go on to this environmental impact. So what was the most important piece of information that you gathered from this part of the course?
Well, before I did the course, I had no idea about the environmental impact, right? So I was quite shocked to find how bad the effects of rearing cattle and sheep had on the environment. It was just something that never crossed my mind. I drive past fields of cows and sheep daily and daily and didn't think about it. The powers that be have got to have a think about that one.
Yes, and I think they need to provide more support in farmers in terms of transitioning over, because yes, subsidies at the moment are very skewed towards the beef and dairy industry, yet vegetable farmers, your potato growers, your broccoli growers, they're not getting all of the support.
No.
Yet we're producing a glut of milk that we don't need. We're producing way too much meat. So yeah, there is a definite need for a policy shift towards supporting the growing of grains and vegetables. So just for people that are maybe listening and don't understand or know what we're talking about yet, animal agriculture industry is responsible for huge emissions. Cattle produce methane, which is a much more dangerous greenhouse gas than CO2, about 25 times more dangerous, in fact, than CO2. So methane is going to warm the atmosphere much quicker. And all of these animals are producing methane, and it's having a disastrous effect on the climate, not to mention all of the forests that are cut down. For example, 96% of the Amazon forest is being cut down in order to grow soybeans, which are fed to cattle, or to graze cattle themselves. So the environmental destruction is just wholesale and quite horrific. Vegan 101 has many other facets to it. It's not just about health and environment and the ethics of eating animals, although those are the main things. But the underlying principle of the course is to have each student actively engage in a range of materials in order to gain a clear understanding of the situation for themselves. You and I are both teachers, and we both know that lecturing people doesn't work. You can't stand up and tell people what to do. It just doesn't happen, and the information doesn't go in. So life would be much simpler if that did work, but lecturing doesn't work. Did you feel your brain working away through all this information in Vegan 101? A lot of which was probably contradictory to what you thought you had known in the past or been taught in the past. And how did you feel as you were working through the course?
Yeah, well, a lot of it was eye-opening stuff. But the more you got into it, the more interested you were in finding out and adding to your knowledge. It was set up in such a way there was a progression, so you were always moving on from one aspect onto the other and seeing how that snowballed after that. And it was always personal. There was always the opportunity to put in your own thoughts and feelings and, where possible, exchange them with other people that were having a go at the course. So that was a valuable aspect of it. And having started it to look at the educational side, I got more and more into the content, which in itself is a reflection on the course.
Well, that's really good to hear. Yeah, the design of the course is purposely designed to provide a framework for people to build up their knowledge and put one piece of information on top of the other, so it all becomes makes sense in their own head, so they build their own schema. So, of course, the big question is, what difference has Vegan 101 made to your life as somebody who set out just to look at it from an educational point of view? But before we get to that, can you just describe your typical day of eating before you participated in the course?
Okay. Well, it's changed in some ways, but breakfast hasn't, because breakfast was a slice of toast, marmalade. I would have had butter in the old days, and a tangerine, and that was it. Now I've substituted the butter with spread, and then I would go out for my coffee and I would have a scone, and that was again dairy and probably butter and jam, and a coffee with not a lot of milk but a little bit of semi-skimmed milk. For our main meal, it would be things like lasagna, fish, chicken. Ate a lot of chicken before because we thought, well, chicken's better than meat.
And so when veg, you say meat, you mean red meat. So very fish, rarely steak or things like that. Fish, yeah.
But we didn't eat a lot of that before, and I now eat no red meat or chicken. But my husband is the problem.
But he's not done the course.
Meat and two veg guide, but because I'm trying to not give him meat, he now feels guilty if he succumbs to it. Mm-hmm. And I feel that's a step in the right direction.
Absolutely.
So he still doesn't eat a lot of meat occasionally.
Yeah.
And that's left to his own devices. But
And that's I think it's just huge because, so you didn't eat a lot of red meat before, but you probably ate quite a lot of chicken because, as most people do, you're told that chicken is healthy. And as you've learned through the course, it's actually got pretty much the same amount of cholesterol in it as red meat, not to mention all the other factors that go into that. So now I know that you've switched out of quite a few things. So plant milk's in your fridge now, for example.
He would have a healthier breakfast than me, porridge with the Oatly milk and fruit. We have spread, and I'm gradually introducing vegan cheese to try and find one that he likes. Mayonnaise, vegan, you know. Throughout the course, I read a lot of labels in, you know, when I was shopping. So I was much more aware of what I was buying and then what I was eating.
You make big, huge pots of vegetable soup, don't you? Because your husband's a gardener.
A thriving vegetable plot. In fact, too much at the moment. I can't keep up with it. So there's no excuse for soups and roasted veg and loads of salad. Excellent. So that's mostly what we're living on just now.
Yeah, and you've even found somewhere locally. Now, again, you're in the absolute middle of the countryside. In fact, the Scottish Government classifies where you live as not just rural, but remote rural. You really couldn't, unless you went and lived in an island, you couldn't get further away from the big city. So even where you are, you've managed to find some really good, a really good coffee shop.
There's a little coffee shop we go to. They do vegan scones, and they always have a vegan option, either a soup or a main. Another coffee shop, and it's all right for me, but I find it's difficult. There isn't really an alternative to stuff like bacon rolls and sausages and all of that.
Yes, so, they haven't gotten on board with the plant-based alternatives.
Like toast or anything like that.
No.
But they are making progress, so, you know, one step at a time.
Absolutely. I think that's brilliant. They've got a vegan scone and a vegan option, and it'll just, over the course, as things go on, you know, they'll add more and more things into it, and as people buy them and they realise it's popular. So of all of the aspects of a plant-based diet that you examined, the health, the environment and the ethical rationale, which spoke to you most and which is now your main motivator for change?
Yeah, it has to be health, and that's partly because of my age and because it's a priority to try and keep as healthy and fit as we can for as long as we can. And so the health factor is what is my main focus.
Yeah, because you're, just to reiterate, you're 70 years old. So to make such big changes to your diet is quite an undertaking and a real achievement. Something you should be very proud of that you managed to do that. I'm guessing a lot of people, by the time you get to your age, would be like, oh, well, you know, that's the way I am. Yeah, and what have
you. But in actual fact, the opposite is true, because
you
survived this long, and lots of studies say that once you reach, I don't know if it's 70, but maybe 75, certainly 80, the big ones are going to catch up with you.
Yeah.
Well, we're trying to prevent that.
So I hear. I think my target audience needs to be retirees then.
Well, yeah, absolutely. People that want to live longer.
Yeah. And healthier, because that's the thing, isn't it? Like, you can live a long time and be really unhealthy and quite miserable and you know, always at the doctor's, or you can live a long time eating properly, taking, you know, a reasonable amount of exercise and having a really good quality of life right up until the end. So that's the plan.
Yeah, that's the plan.
Eat healthily. Yeah. So how have you found this process of change? I'm sure there were lots of challenges that came up along the way. So what were they and how have you overcome them?
Well, a big challenge for me is I don't like cooking.
Yes, me neither.
So you know, in order to make sure that you're eating good stuff, you need to do it yourself, because there's so many hidden things. And I would say that before I didn't eat a lot of dairy, but I probably did, because it was hidden in a lot of things. I take spells when I can't be bothered, and then just now when we have a lot of veg, I'm going back to my recipes, I'm going back to the stuff that I got from the course, and I'm making things from scratch.
Yes.
Now that, it might last forever, but I can do it. I can go and look and see what I need to use for cooking. And sometimes I fall by the wayside and just buy something, but I do buy something that's not meat or chicken or something like that, but sort of ready meal that's reasonable.
But that's okay, because I'm exactly the same. I know that where you are in Scotland, Marks and Spencer's, you know, they're coming out with more plant-based ranges at Sainsbury's. Your challenge is just getting to a big enough supermarket that stocks things like that.
Yeah. Another challenge I have is I personally don't like the fake substitutes, you know, for the meat. I'd much rather not have them. I'd much rather have my protein in another way.
Like beans or lentils or something.
Yeah, beans or lentils, which we do. But I find that difficult to present a meal with enough bulk and that for somebody that's used to meat. So that is a challenge. You know.
Yes, because you're doing all of the cooking, so that it can be tricky. Because, like, in my household, my husband really likes to cook, so that's great. And he cooks sometimes, and I cook sometimes. But when you're the person that's always having to cook, and you're not keen on cooking, then it can get tricky. I would imagine things like when you are in a bigger town, then it would be about buying a lot of frozen meals so that you can have them in the freezer for when you couldn't be bothered cooking, when you can get them, that kind of thing.
But the Marks and Spencer's range, plant-based, is fine, but like most things, like own brands and things, it's a case of trial and error.
Yes.
Something, you know, you think, well, that might sound good, but it doesn't actually, you know,
didn't live up to it.
Not as good as it is. So again, it's a learning process, like everything else.
Yes. Have you noticed a difference in your own health?
Yeah, well, I've lost weight. Yay! Still some weight to go there, but I certainly have, from eating healthier and being more health conscious of what you're eating. And I like trying to exercise regularly, mostly walking. And I think I'm healthier mainly because I'm mainly plant-based. And before, I didn't eat a lot of dairy, but I probably did hidden dairy.
Yes.
But when we were away on holiday and it was a half board basis, and it was in the winter, and it was a lot of rich dairy food, and this upset my stomach quite a bit. You know, it was yogurts, things with sauces on it.
Yeah, cream.
And it didn't agree with me at all. So that would suggest that I wasn't used to coping with it anymore.
Your body probably felt like, oh, I thought we got rid of all that. I was quite happy not having that. And then to load it back on, it was just, it didn't agree with you at all. It's quite interesting, isn't it? But it's...
For me, that was interesting, because I couldn't think why I felt that, you know, while my stomach was upset. But Then I realised that I was eating a lot differently than what I had been for months.
Yeah. Overall, looking back at where you were before Vegan 101, and bearing in mind that this wasn't for you a transition course, for you it was just helping somebody out in terms of checking the technical, the education side of things. Do you feel that you've changed a lot? Did you ever expect to be where you are now?
Well, no, my diet's changed a lot, and I'm much more aware. One of my downfalls is I've got a sweet tooth, right? So, but now I try to find something that fits in, you know, dark chocolate, and I read all the ingredients.
Yeah.
And I also limit myself to, you know, a couple of squares, because I do find, I've always been somebody that likes something sweet after a meal.
Yes.
And my attempts at the baking, you know, baking, the vegan baking, brownies and that, some of that was a hit or a miss, and it was quite labour intensive.
Yes.
So I much prefer to buy a bar of chocolate. So yeah, my diet has changed quite a bit.
Any last words of advice for anyone thinking to sign up for a Vegan Online Academy course?
Well, you say it's targeted at people who have thought of going vegan and they want help, basically. So I would say, if somebody like me that was doing it just as a favour and to look at the way it was presented, and if it can turn me around on the right path, then it's a no-brainer for somebody that really wants to find out how best to do it. And it's so personalised that people will take it, at their own pace. Yeah. It dispels all the myths that you can't have a plant-based diet and get all your nutrients. Mm-hmm. And it raises awareness and it helps and guides you towards the vegan lifestyle that your course members are wanting, you know, without bombarding you with all the do's and don'ts, but it lets you progress at a pace and it's dictated by you, the student. I would be saying go for it.
Excellent. That sounds wonderful. Thank you very much for joining us here today on Vegan Online Academy podcast. Thank you for listening to this Vegan Online Academy podcast. If you have been inspired to start your own vegan journey or would like more support with the vegan journey that you're currently on, please log on to veganonlineacademy.com for more information about our courses.